Now, I want you to imagine that you're in a furniture maker's workshop. The warm scents of timber are wafting in the air. Maybe there's a hint of eucalyptus or hewn pine, if you're lucky. Hello, I'm Hilary Burden. With all this precious timber lying around, it gets you thinking, what happens to all of the offcuts? Do they just get thrown out? Perhaps they're burnt? Well, not if you're David Roundbush. 4 years ago, he started recycling Tasmanian timber offcuts to make handcrafted wooden spoons. Since then, he's made thousands of them and has gained an international following. I've joined him in his studio in the southern Tasmanian town of Cygnet to find out more.
So initially I used salvage timber, so timber that was, say, an old skirting board or an old windowsill or something like that. So I was getting some lovely old Tasmanian timbers like hewn pine, blackwood, those sorts of things. So I'd assess the timber for possible faults like splits and nails and things like that. I'd cut out a shape of a spoon and start carving.
Why did you start with a spoon?
We initially made furniture, and we still do, but I was drowning in offcuts, small pieces of timber that weren't big enough to make a table or something like that, so spoons. Yeah, Michelle and I had a fight one day and I came with a peace offering, you know, I made you a spoon. She said, oh, this could be something. So it sort of progressed from there. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. Initially it was, you know, just an interesting thing, and now I spend pretty much all my time making spoons and sending them all over the world.
What do you think it is about your spoons that's capturing people? Is it the Tasmanianness or how they made? Or
it could be the Tasmanian timbers are pretty unique. They're handmade. I try and tell a bit of a story about the provenance of the timber, what it was before, so people like that little bit of history. Yeah. You know, this was a windowsill, and I show them a photo of what it came out of. That's quite interesting to lots of people. It's interesting to me as well, yeah.
So in a way, the bit that gets discarded has become kind of quite a character.
Definitely. You have to look a bit deeper than just that surface weathered timber, or, you know, it's just an old piece of timber, we'll throw that away. But you have to look inside, and there's some beautiful timbers that are just sent to landfill, really. They're very tactile things, so they're all hand-finished. So they feel good in the hand. They're quite functional, like they're little functional works of art, really. Each one is different. It's very hard to make two the same. In the last few years, I've started carving green spoons as well. So green wood being wood that's just pruned from a tree, or if somebody's taking out a tree, so it's still got the moisture in it. Different process, so that's really broadened the number of timbers that I've carved, because you think of trees lining a street or in people's gardens, there's so many different types, so there's some beautiful timbers out there.
And you're even sharing your skills now. You're running spoon-making workshops.
That's right. Lots of people were asking, so eventually I got to the point where, okay, I'll do it. Start with, like, a log, mm-hmm. Green wood, so this is celery top pine. Start by splitting the log down the middle, so this is a fro. Next comes a little carving hatchet. So then it's just a matter of flattening off the top surface. This is actually, I don't get to carve this sort of wood very often because obviously it's growing in a rainforest and I don't go chopping down trees to make spoons. This came from the tarkine.
How did it come from the tarkine?
Well, some of the people that are protesting up there salvaged some wood from some of the logging coops. This was destined to be bulldozed up and burnt. Pretty smooth. I draw what I want to carve out. Sometimes there are features in the timber that just make you avoid symmetry. The rough shape of a spoon. So now it's just about getting rid of all the bits that aren't the spoon. But this will dry fairly hard. Well, as hard as celery top pine can dry.
So we've moved inside now. You're sitting down inside the studio and you're picking up a different tool, David.
So, yep, this is the draw knife. So two hands, one blade in the middle, and it just helps me get closer to that line with accuracy, the line that I've marked out for the spoon.
Now, you could be doing this with a bandsaw, David, but why do you choose to do it by hand?
I think the beauty of a handmade object with its little imperfections, you know, it might take longer and cost more, but I think lots of people appreciate the time and effort put in. No noise, no dust.
It's sort of the opposite the way the world's been going for a long time, isn't it? We're making sort of everyday objects mass-produced, but this is going back.
Yep, this is not a disposable spoon. This is something that should last for generations.
Do you sign them?
I do, put a little mark on each one.
I'd be too scared to use it, I think.
No. They're definitely made to be used. It's just a spoon. What's going to happen to it? It'll change colour if you stick it in the curry. Not a problem. Rightio, so that shape's roughly there. So then we come to this is the most fun part. Hook knife, so it's just a knife that's curved for hollowing out the spoon.
So you're working around the edge of the spoon to dig out the hollow of it.
Hollow, yeah.
The hollow wings.
The business part of a spoon. Beautiful little chips of pine. I either put the chips on the garden as mulch, or when I send spoons in the mail, it's excellent packaging material, and it's free.
What are some of the favourite reactions you've got from people?
Well, from the people that do the workshops, I guess there's a good cross-section of people that nobody hasn't enjoyed it. It's either that was really fun, thank you, to that was excellent, where can I buy the tools? And they go home and buy the tools that night and they're doing it the next day. So it's quite an addictive thing.